This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
What is basic human dignity? Apparently, it's at least a shower. As we've heard today, the federal government has done a backflip after 6 months of making people co-pay for showering, dressing and managing incontinence for older people in home care. The government now says they're the basics of ageing with dignity. They're clinical care, not optional extras. I'd like to ask you, what else is required for dignity? And are we giving it to our ageing population? So showers, that's easy, isn't it? The government got the message, let alone continence management. But what else should be basic? Is it access to free-to-air TV? For some people, that's their only link to the world. I'm Mary Guerin. Last month on The Conversation Hour, we highlighted the trial that one major residential aged care provider was conducting that charged residents for access to free-to-air TVs and also more than one hot meal a day. Now, that provider has since rolled it back partially to apply to just new residents. And at the time, the aged care minister, Sam Ray, said having access to a telly is a basic human right. Well, we've asked the minister the outcome of the regulator investigation that he called back then, and we haven't yet received a response. We're waiting. But you tell me, what else is a human right when it comes to our ageing population? Maybe you think it's shorter waiting time for assessments. Is that basic for dignity? And if so, what should be the benchmarks for that? What about human touch? What will AI in aged care mean? We know that the federal government is looking at it, at least trying to plan for it. Tell me what you believe is a basic human right we feel that you feel we've undervalued for our aged care. We'll explore what else we should be considering, this issue of artificial intelligence with aged care. Look, that could help, right? It could help with resourcing. But it does make us ask those questions, put a new light on the role of humanity in aged care settings. I'd love to hear from you and to hear your thoughts. Also, are you just loving that free transport, free public transport? What are you doing with the extra, I don't know, $50 a week in your pocket? There's a lot of talk about the Greens proposal to make that permanent. That's great if you do already have access to public transport, but does it lock in transport inequality if you don't? If you're in the city, that's fantastic. If you're on major lines, what if you're not? We have heard those horror stories about V-Line, and we're going to hear another really, really difficult situation for someone in this hour. What do you believe should happen with public transport? What are the flow-on effects of free public transport? Does it entrench inequality? And if that's not the answer, then I want to know this hour, what's the sort of blue sky thinking that we need to make sure in the end that everyone has access to public transport, if indeed that is the goal? Should that be our goal? We'll dig into that this hour. Also this hour, it's always a challenge. We're going to be digging into how to eat well on a tight budget. I bet plenty of you have got tips for me and I'd love to hear about them. Kathy in Bayside, what do you believe should be the basic rights when it comes to ageing?
Yes, good morning, Mary. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, it's just this whole issue is infuriating me because older people deserve to be treated with respect and kindness. And the whole NDIS system is a debacle as well. So, you know, everything needs a major overview.
What do you think is missing in terms of that respect and kindness?
Oh, well, they're just not getting the proper support systems in place. I think carers need to be paid more money. As I've just said, basic support systems. Yeah. Government's not addressing it.
Kathy, thank you. Really appreciate your call. I think that does set the tenor of the conversation that we should be having. David in Doncaster, what do you believe about this?
The big issue is I'm a veteran and I go to veteran coffee catch-ups and I'm talking to a lot of the elderly veterans. And with this free public transport, they can't get a seat and they have to stand. So the basic need for elderly is being able to get around and about, because quite often they can't, not allowed to drive anymore. Mm-hmm. And the public transport stuff at the moment with the free travel, no one is considerate of the elderly. They get on and they have to stand and be packed in like cattle. And a lot of the veterans that I've spoken to are basically now refusing to leave their home because they don't have a safe equitable public transport for them to be able to leave their home.
So they're just too crowded, or is it the rudeness as well, David?
Well, it's overcrowdedness and also the rudeness of the people that just say, well, I've got the seat, stuff you.
Yeah, David, I love that you've drawn together the two strands of our conversation this morning. Thank you for calling. We're talking about what's the basics for human dignity when it comes to our ageing population. And also, yes, what do we do about public transport? Wonderful to have it free, at least for a couple of months and half price to the end of the year. But big picture, what should we be looking at? 1300 222 774 is the number to join me in conversation. Next, now that we have figured out that showers are considered basic for human dignity, what else? Tom Simonson is CEO of Ageing Australia, and he's here to talk about this, maybe even answer some questions if you'd like. Thank you so much for joining me, Tom.
You're very welcome.
As we've said, the federal government has responded to feedback, has backflipped, it must be said, on these particular issues. What's your response? And in particular, I'd like to ask, what's your response that it will take till October for that to be reversed?
Well, the response to the decision is great, because we've been saying for a while now our members provide services to, you know, over a million older Australians every day, and they have been saying people are stopping having showers because they're worried about the cost. So this was clearly something that had to be changed. I'd prefer it came in yesterday, frankly, when it was announced. And you know, we've got to wait until the 1st of October, but, you know, glass half full, glass half empty, this will help hundreds of thousands of older people and millions into the future, because it gets rid of those contributions forever.
What's your understanding? Have you been told what the thinking is behind this wait till October?
I don't know the reason for 1 October. There are a number of things in aged care that get reviewed or uplifted, indexed on the 1st of October each year. So it might be because of that. But obviously there's complex decisions they have to make, and they've made it the way they have. I'm trying to focus on the fact that this is something we really needed to happen, because people were starting to say, I could only afford one or two showers a week. Now, that's not okay. So this is a good outcome.
Tom Simonson is CEO of Ageing Australia, and we're talking about the changes to what is considered clinical care and what, therefore, we would need to co-pay. We'll get to some calls that are coming in, and 1300 222 774 if you would like to join the conversation. But Tom, what do you fear that other things are vulnerable as the government tweaks its approach to aged care provisions? And what else might you think should also be considered clinical care that is not?
Well, we were really focused on showering. So to be honest, to get assistance with dressing and with continence management is better than we were expecting. So I would have said those two things, because, I mean, it's all well and good someone supporting you to shower, but if you can't get dressed afterwards, what's the point? So these things are really, that's about basic dignity. Now, there are a whole range of things that home care services provide that are less about immediate dignity and more about your ability to live at home, like cleaning and gardening. I know there will be people who say they should be free as well, but those, I'm less worried about those having some contribution towards them. What matters is that the things that allow you to get out of bed in the morning, to walk about or move about in your own home, to be clean and to be physically healthy, because clinical care has been free since the beginning, nursing care, allied health, those are what really, really matter immediately to older people being able to live a life of dignity.
Mm. Ken, you called in from Geelong. What would you like to say? Hi, Ken.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Hello.
Hi.
I suppose for me, I just look about dignity of a person, and there's some issues there where elderly people are having to go and stay with friends and relatives that probably don't have a lot of obligation to them. And I just wonder how dignified it is when we're spending billions of dollars on tunnels and all these sort of big builds, etc. But there's people in their later years, 60s, 70s, wherever, even 80s, that don't have a good home or a dignified existence in a place that they can call their own. So I'm not sure how we go about supporting that, but I think that that's not a bad starting point with some of the things we look at as well.
Oh, Ken, thanks for calling in. Yes, Tom, the dignity that comes with having shelter.
Absolutely. And one of your earlier callers talked about treating veterans with respect. Given what's happening on Saturday with Anzac Day, I was touring a veterans home yesterday where people were saying I was homeless when I came out of the armed forces because this country unfortunately doesn't look after its veterans the way that it should. And the services run by the RSL are able to provide housing that in some cases those veterans wouldn't have had otherwise. Housing is the number one definer of whether you have a good life. That's as simple as that. If you haven't got secure housing, you are much more likely to have a difficult time, and as you age it's even worse. And for women over 55, that is the fastest growing section of the community experiencing homelessness, which in a country as wealthy as this we should be ashamed of.
1300 222 774. We're talking about the basics of dignity. I want to take this away from that in-home care that has started off this conversation to something we were looking at a few weeks ago, Tom, and it has to do with the HELF, Higher Everyday Living Fees payment, that also came in as part of the reforms last year. We heard that at the time there was a major provider who's trialling making people pay for access to free-to-air TVs and a certain number of hot meals. They've rolled it back slightly to only be a trial on new residents. This has just come in from Jocelyn, who says, I think it's a basic human right for aged care residents to have a choice of what they'd like to eat without having to pay extra in the new funding health packages. My mum's aged care facility wants to charge $24 a day for my mum to have a choice of meals or to have a scrambled egg in the morning instead of porridge. This is affecting many residents. And thanks for discussing this issue. So, Tom, we have asked the minister for any feedback about health. He said that there would be an investigation into this. What's your position on it?
Well, health, so there was a different system before 1 November. It was called additional services, and you could basically move into a home that had these additional fees where you would get different things than the government pays for, because that's the bottom line. What health is doing is giving you the things government does not pay for. And that was abolished because there were people who were uncomfortable with that, because it meant if that was your nearest home and you didn't have the money, you might feel you couldn't go to residential care. So now you can have health in any home and people can sign up to it or not. And that becomes really important. What does the government expect providers to provide versus what does it expect older people to pay for? And I was quite surprised myself to find out that TVs are not something that the government pays for. And
well, so when you look at the website, Tom, there is no definition. I think they give an example of a haircut maybe, but that's about it.
Yes, but there's another list that says what you have to provide as a provider, and these are not things that appear. And so what we're trying to do with government is say, like things like Wi-Fi in this day and age are things people just expect. So what do we need to do as a society to make sure those things are provided and not things that people have to pay for? Now, on the choice of meal, there has to be a choice of meal. So just want to be really clear, you must have a choice of meal at lunch and at dinner. The issue is how many hot choices. Mm-hmm. So I don't want people thinking they go in and there's no choice. That is absolutely against the rules. And any provider that's not providing any choice, you send them to me because it's not okay. But
Jocelyn, I hope you're listening.
But it's about what those choices must consist of.
Yep. So for the record, you seem to be saying that you are thinking Wi-Fi should be included as a basic right, potentially free-to-air TVs. Maybe hot meals is a bit too tricky when it comes to the cost.
Well, these are the kinds of things that older people are telling us they assume are basic rights. Now, I'm not saying that's our firm position. These are the kind of conversations we have to have with government. But in the reaction to those stories about health, it was very clear that the community thought that TVs and Wi-Fi were basic rights. I think the challenge comes when we say, but that costs more money, and is the taxpayer willing to pay more to cover it? It's why the contributions in home care came in the first place, because you know, the community doesn't want to pay more tax, but it wants people to have more services for free. So which do you choose? Mm. But that's the conversation we've got to have. What do we think as a community our taxes should buy for older people, particularly vulnerable older people?
Before I let you go, Tom, really quickly, we know that the federal government is planning to develop an AI framework in aged care. What do you believe should be? Is that a good or bad thing?
I think it's absolutely unavoidable. AI is already in organisations. We're using it to help manage our rosters, to work out what's the best way to deploy staff, what's the most efficient way to buy products. We're using it to help improve the quality of written materials. You know, we're doing all of those kinds of things. But increasingly in other countries, particularly Southeast Asia, there are AI-enabled robots that people use as companionship when there isn't a human available. Should never replace a human, certainly not in Australia. We wouldn't tolerate that. But that is happening in other countries, and people are coming here selling these robots. I think they're a good thing if someone's comfortable having them. But we've got to make sure there's no data risk, that there's no cybersecurity risk, and that they're being used to help human staff, not replace them.
Mm. Yes, when it comes to basic human rights, there'll be a good and long conversation about that, I hope. Tom Simonson, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Tom Simonson is CEO of Ageing Australia. Samantha Edmonds is Director of Policy Education and Systematic Advocacy in OPAN, which is Older Persons Advocacy Network. Samantha, thank you for joining us. I presume you too welcome this change from the government, but what about that wait till October?
Look, we would love to have seen it come in much earlier, but we also understand that there are systems that need to be changed, particularly IT systems with Services Australia and with providers so that they can do this. So we do welcome that change. We would have liked to have seen it earlier, but we understand why the delay has happened.
You've been listening to our conversation about what is basic human rights. Is there anything that you, what's the next step for you when it comes to making sure that our ageing population has what they basically need for free, as included in the clinical care?
So our next things that we're focusing on now, and it's not necessarily about being in clinical care, mm-hmm. but things like access to cottage respite that had been removed from the support at home program, access to packages quicker than is happening now, and people getting the package that they need that actually meets their needs rather than being assessed as lower than the level that they need. And I just overheard Tom in terms of the health program, so obviously access to TVs and Wi-Fi in residential aged care.
So you also are weighing in on the health issue there. Do you fear that it's going to get out of control?
We know that the department has just held a consultation on health and what that might look like. So we were waiting on the outcomes from that. We certainly have been arguing for a long time that TVs and Wi-Fi should be included within the health program as a free service provided by providers. As noted by Tom, these are services that everyone expects to have access to. And in today's world, we can't exist without Wi-Fi and being able to connect with families or supports or other things through that. So we really would like to see those things added. We are concerned that health could drive a bit of a two-tier system. So if you can afford it, you get a glass of wine. If you can't, you get a glass of water. So there are concerns around health.
Kerry from Warrnambool has just texted in saying these healths create a two-tiered system in aged care communities between those who can afford and those who cannot. This is not acceptable. At least, Sam, I'm assuming that you are heartened by the federal government saying that they have listened. Is it a matter of making more noise when you can?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's we really appreciate the wins when we get them. And I'm certain that older people also appreciate those wins because their voices have certainly been long and loud about these issues. So it's great to see this happen.
Samantha, thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
Samantha Edmonds is from OPAN, which is the Older Persons Advocacy Network. It's 25 minutes past 11 and we will continue talking about what are those basics of human dignity. But we're going to next talk about something that's also pretty basic, the ability to get around. Free transport, we've got it. Is it enough? How do we make sure everyone's got access to transport?
on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
In this next conversation, I want to talk about the pros and the cons of the free transport. We've got a couple of months of free transport in Victoria and a lot of us are saving some money, but really, that's for those of us who are in the city or on the lines. The people who do not, the people who are victims of greater transport inequality, we know that they have been suffering lots and lots of different stories. Before we get into the sort of the macro view of what can be done and the blue sky thinking that we need, I want to bring in David Sparks, who has had lived experience of some of the unexpected consequences, I think would be said, from free transport hitting our state. David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Mary. Pleasure.
So you are in a position where you really need V-Line. Can you say why?
I'll just get down to Melbourne for medical appointments. We were meant to have an appointment with my wife's neurologist on Tuesday, but we had to cancel that because seats weren't available for us to get on the train.
They weren't available to be reserved, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We had booked these tickets early February, and I saw an article on the newspaper about overcrowding on the trains. So I contacted V-Line and they said that the seats on the Albury line, which is where we would be travelling on, is on a first-come, first-served basis. Now, that to us is no good because my wife was visiting her neurologist. She has MS and she really does need a seat to sit down. And if they couldn't guarantee it, it means we really can't get there very easily at all.
And did, when you contacted them, did they give you any way around this? Any special?
No.
No?
No, no, not at all.
And what does it mean to miss that appointment, David?
Well, we've had to reschedule it, and hopefully the trains will get back to normal sometime. But it is just at the moment a nuisance. If not, we'll have to make arrangements, and I don't know how we're going to do that.
How's your wife in terms of handling that when she's got so much to juggle, both you and her?
She would like to go and see a neurologist. Her MS is progressed to secondary progressive MS. She's getting worse. She's becoming slower in her movements and in walking, and her sense of balance is getting a lot worse.
I've got this on text, David. It sounds like you've been doing the hard yards calling people, but someone is saying it's first come, first serve unless you booked prior to free travel and then seat is meant to be honoured. Nothing like that was said to you?
Nothing like that was sent to us at all.
So what do you do from now? You've got those two further trips planned. You're just waiting to see?
We're waiting to see what happens, basically. I've got to see my haematologist in May and my cardiologist in June. And hopefully things go back to normal. If not, we're in a bit of trouble.
So, David, if we're talking about free transport, I'm sure you would have loved the idea if you heard about it and thought, yay, fantastic. This is an unintended consequence, at least to the way it's been rolled out in Victoria.
Oh, yes. I think the free public transport is a great idea. I'm fully in favour of that, but I just wish we could have guaranteed seats on the train and that would solve our problems.
David, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think we all take this up with the government, see what is the deal with people in your situation. I really wish you and your wife all the very best, and I wish you, more than that, I wish you seats.
Okay, thank you for that, Mary.
David Sparks, who lives in Violet Town. Well, that's the real life experience, isn't it, that so many people are facing. Rod Campbell is a research director with Australia Institute and is in support of free transport. And he's been listening to that story as well. Hi, Rod. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, Mary.
So before we go into, you know, the big picture, why free transport is good, what would you have to say about the experience of people like David and his wife?
Oh, obviously, that's no good. And our service providers need to be making sure that people with special needs are able to use the services that they usually use.
So in other words, to be able to at least reserve seats in certain circumstances.
Yeah, or, you know, I don't run a train system, but I'm sure that there are ways that train systems in general account for these kinds of passengers.
So you don't run a train system, but in your view, free transport is a legitimate, like permanently free public transport is a legitimate policy?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't run a train system. I'm an economist. and so like most economists, I like to maximise the value of our existing assets. And seeing lots of people using our public transport is a good problem to have. Obviously, I'm concerned about the gentleman calling in before, but we've paid for these assets. They're there, the networks are there, and we should be using them, and we should be celebrating them being widely used and celebrating them being there to be used in a time of crisis like this.
So I think we'll talk about at least two aspects, the cost and the inequality. Let's go to the cost first. I think it's been estimated up to $1 billion a year in Victoria would be foregone in sales. How does that work from an economist's point of view? That's a lot of money to lose.
Yeah, it's a lot of money for you and me, but for a state government, it's not a huge amount. I mean, the Victorian budget's over $100 billion a year, so it's about 1%, nothing to be sneezed at. But budgets are about choices, and the state government can choose to provide public transport to the Victorian community that helps it through this crisis or indeed more permanently. And we've seen that happen in Queensland. Prior to the last election, the Queensland government increased coal royalties on the multinational coal export companies that operate in Queensland and explicitly linked, at least rhetorically, if not actually from an accounting perspective, but they linked that increase in fees on multinational coal companies to providing near-free public transport. It's 50 cents per fare up there. That was a significant reduction. So, yeah, absolutely, it can be done. Queensland's shown how to do it.
1300 222 774, if you'd like to join the conversation. Should free public transport be permanent, or does it entrench inequality? We'll go to that second aspect now, Rod. For it's all well and good to if you've got access to it. What about entrenching inequality? How do we counter that?
Yeah, equality and increases in inequality in Australia are a serious issue, and they've been a serious focus of the Australia Institute's research for a very long time. But I think in suggesting that we shouldn't have free public transport or very cheap public transport because there are more trams in richer neighbourhoods, I think that's actually it's a bit the tail wagging the dog. You know, if we're serious about equality in Australia, we'll start looking at wealth taxes. We'll start looking at land taxes. We'll start investing seriously in public housing and in homelessness services. We will increase unemployment benefits. Those are the big ticket items in terms of economic inequality in Australia.
Isn't that a hard sell at this time in particular, Rod? You know, for wealth tax, sure, by definition, you know, certain people can afford it, but land taxes and so forth, maybe not.
Oh, but you've got to look at how land taxes work. And, you know, there's huge potential for the very wealthy neighbourhoods in Melbourne to pay a lot more in land tax. So Australian governments and, you know, the Victorian government, various, some not all local governments, and certainly the federal government, really need to concentrate on raising more revenue. If you look internationally, Australia Australian governments don't raise enough revenue. Well, I think we're one, you know, we're the fifth or sixth lowest taxing nation in the OECD, and that's mainly because we don't tax wealth, we don't tax big corporations, we're giving away our gas resources for free. So there's no shortage of money for Australian governments, state governments, federal governments, some local governments, and using some of that money to provide cheap or free public transport is a good use of it.
Jenny in Mentone is asking, who then pays for the maintenance and improvement of the rail system? You're saying it all comes down to the tax system, Rod?
Yeah, it does already. You know, we don't run a public transport system to make profit or even to stay in the black. We run a public transport system for the benefit of the public and to maximise the value of the assets that we have. So, you know, we want bums on seats, including people with special needs, and this is helping do that.
Rod, thank you so much for helping us kick off the conversation.
Thanks very much, Mary.
That's Rod Campbell, Research Director with the Australia Institute. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. My next guest will also offer a slightly different perspective. You are texting in many times about David, suggesting, I believe, Red Cross or other ways of David getting himself and his wife down to town. And also just asking people to stand up. Maybe it does come to that. Joining us now is Jago Dodson, who is Professor of Urban Policy at RMIT University. Thank you for joining me, Jago.
Good morning, Mary.
We just listened to Rod Campbell there saying, look, it's entirely possible if we just overhaul the tax system. I'm being facetious there, but it is possible to have free public transport permanently and a good idea. What do you think?
Look, I think if we were to bundle in free public transport within a much larger scale taxation and revenue reform program, as the previous guest was outlining, then it might be justifiable. But at the moment, the suggestions are basically, as we have in Victoria, to just make public transport free during this very acute phase of the fuel crisis we're experiencing. And it's not being accompanied by wider system reform. So in that case, there is a degree of regressiveness in terms of who benefits from that policy. And as has been discussed just earlier, it's primarily the wealthier households in inner and middle suburbs who have good access to public transport versus those, say, out on the fringe who are much more car dependent and where public transport doesn't operate at a level that's viable for most people's travel patterns. We need to think about short term and long term in this conversation.
So, short term, do you believe? How do we attack it in the short term, when we've also got this perfect storm of fuel crisis and instability around the world?
Yeah, well, there's two elements to this. One is the providing for people's travel around the city, and the costs of that, and who benefits from, say, free public transport versus who doesn't. So that's one consideration. But then with this potentially more acute fuel security crisis we're facing, there's the question of absolutely saving fuel wherever we can within our transport system so that more is available for the most essential forms of travel like freight and logistics, food, emergency services and so forth. And in that context, one might be able to justify free public transport in terms of the fuel savings that arise from people leaving their cars at home and using public transport, though the total volume of fuel saved is still likely to be relatively modest unless we're getting to the point where we're actively imposing restrictions on car travel and saying, you know, only certain days of the week, you know, the old carless days approach, and therefore you use public transport other times, or we start to ration fuel at the Bowser, those kind of interventions, then free public transport might be justifiable.
If we are obviously juggling the needs of the future versus the needs of the present, and there's obviously going to be, in an ideal world, better infrastructure everywhere, what's the in-between, Jago? Do we put more buses on the roads, or how do we breach between that short-term relief for people and that longer-term spreading of the infrastructure to people?
Yeah, so this is a really challenging question, especially when our budgets are limited. So it's a question of what intervention, what policy or what service provision would be most effective in terms of providing better services to those that are currently poorly served over the medium term versus the long term. And obviously, we've got big infrastructure projects like the Suburban Rail Loop, which is going to serve rail services to the middle suburbs of the southeast of Melbourne. But there's a lot that we could do just by simply reforming our existing bus networks through the suburbs so that they run more effectively as a network. At the moment, there's lots of bus routes that were established 30, 40, 50 years ago. They wind through the suburbs. They're not very well connected to the rail network or to other bus services. And they've just been operating that way for years without much thought about how effective they are as a network overall. There's quite a lot of research that's been done in Melbourne about how can we take what planners call the route kilometres, so how many kilometres of bus route we currently have, and rationalise them so they run faster, more directly, they're better connected, the timetables are coordinated, they connect to shopping centres and rail stations. And we could do quite a lot through just simple bus network reform in terms of better services without needing a huge amount of additional bus rolling stock or new trains and so forth. So that's something that could be done in the medium term. And I would think that the current crisis is a good moment to crystallise planning intention and the public demand around that kind of major reform of our bus networks. But then, again, we could be rolling out new rolling stock to add new bus routes, especially in those outer suburban areas that have the services have not kept up with the urban growth we've seen.
It is always in times of crisis. The importance of your work and of other researchers as well comes to the fore, Jago. Thank you for helping us today.
Great. Thanks, Mary.
That's Jago Dodson, who's Professor of Urban Policy at RMIT University. Lots of calls and texts coming in. Beryl, you've called in from Ararat. What do you think should happen? You're on the V-line.
I am, and I use it quite regularly. And at Southern Cross, there is a wonderful service called Traveller's Aid for people who need extra help, either for medical conditions or age. But I was wondering whether if the customers got in touch with the V-Line and just told their condition, that an assisted care service could not be set up to make sure that they had a seat.
Beryl, that sounds very sensible. I would assume David had done that. We need to double check about that. But thank you. It's good to know about the Southern Cross service as well. David in Moe, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning, Mary. Yeah, sort of on the same theme as the last person. I've just retired and I use V-Line a bit. And every carriage has seats for people. If you ask for them, well, you've got to be a little assertive. Ask for the seat, they have to give them up to you, and you have a seat. There's no problem.
Mm, you think it comes down to one-on-one. Don't go through the bureaucracy.
No, you don't have to. The seats are there for people who need them, like older people or disabled or anyone who needs those seats. You just ask, and they're given up to you. You see a younger person sitting in one, ask for it. And you're supported by people around you. There's other customers. The train's full. And you've got a conductor as well. There's no issue. Everyone else will poo-hoo them if they don't give it up to you.
David, I love it, and I would love to think that that is what is happening around you on V-Line as well. Thank you so much for calling in. Alan from Kahuna says, what do country people get from free transport? Sweet, nothing, just a bigger tax bill. David from Belgrave says, I'd prefer some charge was collected for using public transport, but the money collected went to development of public transport in those outer suburbs where virtually none currently exists. I don't think taxpayers in outer suburbs should be funding free travel for inner city Victorians. And Pauline in Geelong says, this free public transport is meant for everyone. The people that complain about not getting a seat are like the people who complain about traffic on the roads. They think they're the only ones entitled to be using the trains or road. Thank you for joining me in this conversation. We also have been talking about dignity in aged care, and I will get to more texts and calls as we go through this hour. But it is 11:45 and I do want to hear from you on this. I know so many of you will have tips. How do you eat well? How do you eat healthily on a tight budget. It's in our minds, we've got the pressure on our wallets, but we still want ourselves and our loved ones to eat well. We'll get some expert advice. I also want to hear from you.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
We've been talking a lot about self-sufficiency. It is the buzzword. It is about, hey, how do we rethink our lives so that we can exist better on a tighter budget, not compromise our health or well-being. 1300 222 774. I want to know what you've been doing to eat better on a tight budget. Maybe you're heading into the pantry. Maybe you're thinking about eating in a very different way. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. 0437 774 774 the number to text. Give me your tips. Joining me is Evangeline Matsioris, who is Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at University of South Australia. Hi, Evangeline.
Hi, how are you, Mary?
Very well, thank you. How are you going in these tough times? Are you always eating well on a budget?
Absolutely. I think the key is going back to basics and trying to remember what does make a diet healthy. And it's lots of fruit and veg, trying to get those plant foods in, including, I reckon, an Australian favourite, the old baked beans.
The baked beans. Okay. We'll get to the canned goods in a bit, but I'd love to hear from you, 1300 222 774. What's your tip for a cheap, healthy meal? Evangeline, you said fruit and veg straight off the top there. In the back of my mind, there are those stats that says, look, it's just cheaper sometimes to get fast food. Is that right or not?
Look, I think it depends on what sort of fruit and veg you're buying. If you're buying, you know, expensive berries and exotic fruits, it might seem like the fast foods are cheaper. But I think if you're sticking to the basics, you know, carrots, potatoes, and also looking at using tinned and frozen, you're going to find that a whole lot cheaper than, you know, takeaway foods. And I think frozen foods have always had a bad, you know, image, because people think they aren't quite as healthy. But the research tells us that when frozen fruit and veg can be just as nutritious, if not more, than your fresh variety.
If not more? How does that work?
Well, let's take the pea or the corn. It's snap frozen at the time of harvest. So the nutrient level at that point is what's preserved. And whilst a produce like that is frozen over a period of time, it loses very little of its vitamins. If we compare that to the same product that will go from farm to the supermarket to then your kitchen and then stay around at higher temperatures, so not frozen, that whole period of time you get the vitamins degrading.
Mm. So what are some examples of how you make a meal out of, I guess, the frozen or tinned foods?
Yeah, look, I think, and this is going back, isn't it, to some favourite old types, but, you know, tuna, chicken mornay is an excellent choice. You can make a nice white sauce with cheese and milk in it. Add whatever frozen veg you've got, and then you can either use a can of tuna or some chicken, and both of those meats are relatively cheap. You can add spices to it, herbs to it, flavour to it, chilli, whatever you like to make it, you know, more tasty according to your taste as well. The other thing to consider would be, you know, pasta dishes made with veggies in it, buying some minced meat, a little bit more expensive than chicken. But you could also just use chicken in your pasta sauces as well, alongside, you know, the different types of vegetables that you might have. I think it's just thinking, what recipes are you using at the moment that you can use frozen veg or canned veg in to make them just as tasty?
1300 222 774. You've already got me thinking about lunch when you mentioned tuna mornay. So thank you. Evangeline Matsioris is the Program Director of Human Nutrition Degree at the Adelaide Uni. This on text, buy seasonal fruit and veg. How does that comparison happen, Evangeline, in terms of you've pointed out the health and cost benefits of the frozen? Does that outrank seasonal fruit and veg as well?
Look, it does, just because it's snap frozen. It doesn't mean that you should always buy frozen. Of course, buy the fresh seasonal vegetables because they're always cheaper. And there's some vegetables that you can't freeze. For example, you know, your salad style of vegetables can't be frozen and then used in a salad. So go for the cheap seasonal fresh vegetables so you can get more of that variety that you might want in your menu, and then use the frozen vegetables at, you know, for those other dishes that you want to consume but may not be seasonally available at the time.
Mm. Alex has texted saying, tinned fruit for kids over winter is the best. Berries are too expensive out of season. Kids love tinned pineapple and peaches. Frozen veg is also the best, says Alex. What do you think, Evangeline?
Absolutely, yeah. Tinned fruit, absolutely. You know, getting peaches and pineapple out of season is a good way of, you know, using the tinned products. The only thing to be mindful of is not to buy the ones that have got lots of extra added sugar to it.
Mm.
So pick the ones that might be canned in pear juice and then try to drain that off so you don't get that extra sugar.
Mm.
Frozen berries are a whole lot cheaper than fresh berries. So don't forget to look for the frozen berries if you still like having, you know, some berries in your muesli in the morning.
Yeah. This on text, add red lentils and lots of veg to any minced meat dishes. You can cut the meat down a lot doing that.
Absolutely. Look, lentils and beans are probably the forgotten food in this. They are extremely cheap if you compare it to meat, and they're very versatile, and they've got a long shelf life. So you can buy canned or dried, keep them in the pantry, and then they're ready to use whenever you want. And they are also very nutritious. Mm. They contain lots of protein in them, and they also contain lots of fibre. So both of those are important for good health.
We are talking about how we eat healthily on a tight budget. 1300 222 774 if you've got an absolute go-to on this. Holly from Yark says, great tip for also storing, freezing grated cheese, vegetables, buy fresh rolls and freeze them straight away. They stay so fresh and it saves on waste. That's like a triple whammy there, Holly. What do you think, Evangeline? Well, the role absolutely. Of freezing from fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. It reduces food waste. And don't forget, food waste isn't just the food you've wasted. It's the money that goes down the drain when you do that. And that's the other advantage of frozen veg. You know, you've got a bag of peas, you can take out half a cup and then use it in your dish. And then the remaining, you know, stays in the freezer safe until you next need to use it again. So particularly if you find produce on special and you know you're not going to get through it in the week, divvy it up and freeze it so you've got it there for when you need it.
Mm. And just lastly, Evangeline, I think there are a lot of people who are, I can see on the text, saying, look, you just need a little bit of time. It, you know, fast food, it is more expensive. It's just so convenient. What do you say to people about, I guess, that time management when it comes to food?
Yeah, look, there's always, it's always tricky, isn't it? Because when you do get fast food, there's a time loss, I guess, in waiting for it to arrive, in which you could prep something really easy. And I think one of my favourite go-tos is either pasta, you know, with a sauce on and throwing some veggies in, mm-hmm. or making pizzas at home. And that could just be with flatbread. You have your frozen grated cheese. I think you can have a bit of pizza sauce to put on top. And then using up any leftovers that you've got, you know, mushrooms, olives, chicken pieces, you know, leftover curries could go on it. Whatever you like. And everyone loves a pizza.
Everyone loves a pizza. Evangeline Mancioris, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Evangeline is an associate professor and practicing dietitian with the Adelaide Uni and program director of the Human Nutrition Degree. You're making me all very hungry with all of your texts here. Louise from Doncaster says, a chicken breast costing $4, any leftover veggies, all sliced, a packet of 2-minute noodles, a main course, doing me and my husband for two meals. Good on you, Louise. Kathy, you've called in talking about public transport. What did you want to say? Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Excellent.
We can hear you now.
I live in a regional city, and I'm part of a support group for rough sleepers there. We had a meeting last night where we were talking about the free public transport. The unexpected consequence, I guess, that we've found is that some of the rough sleepers who've been living in Melbourne Central have taken the opportunity to move out of Melbourne, try some of the regional cities or towns, which is fantastic. It's putting a lot of pressure on those regional cities and towns to be able to support the increase in numbers.
Oh, that's interesting. Where are the places they're going to, Kathy?
So Shepparton, Ballarat, Bendigo, probably up to Wodonga, because they can. They see it as an opportunity to try to go somewhere and have a better life, albeit still sleeping rough, but out of the city.
Yeah.
Which we just found fascinating. The other comment that they've been, that has been anecdotally fed back to us is when it's a cold, wet, horrible day, they can now get on a train and travel as far as the train is going. They're warm, they're dry, they can maybe stay in that place for a couple of days, or they can just turn around and get the next train back.
Kathy, that's so interesting. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. I'm going to follow that up because, yeah, indeed, that could be putting pressure. I'd love to hear from people. Write to me at conversationhour@abc.net.au if you've seen that where you're living as well. Kathy, thank you. And Ted, you've called in from Sandringham. You wanted to talk about dignity in aged care?
I want to talk about why the government is finding it very difficult to fund both aged care and NDIS care.
What do you think?
And the reason is, in my opinion, with first-hand experience of both, is the huge charge-out amounts for services vis-a-vis the actual services provided, and the huge chunk that's going to the middlemen in all of this.
Right, all of the fees.
Proliferation.
Ted, that's really interesting. It is a complex system and there are so many fees. Thank you for ringing and joining that conversation. For everyone who's joined us, it's been really interesting and touching and poignant to hear so many of your stories. Have a wonderful day. Do write to me if you have any tips about what we should be talking about. Take care out there. Seems like beautiful weather. See you tomorrow.